be entrepreneurs, ethical entrepreneurs, social entrepreneurs, internet entrepreneurs. And that's an amazing shift, because people realize that an individual person who collects a small team around them, 4, 5, 10, 20 people, can create significant impact. And the largest my company's ever been is 50 people. And we've been working all around the world with large governments, small governments, with some of the biggest companies in the world, and creating significant change in how they think, just from a really small little base of people and a dream, because we decided we could. There was no reason we had to, we got to where we were, apart from basically courage and conviction of our beliefs. So what happens when the power goes to the edges is that our peers become more powerful than big figures, big rigs. Our peers become the most influential people in our lives. That's always been happening, but we never really studied it so much. So one of the things we're starting to see is that they now realize that even behaviors like obesity, the obesity epidemic, is actually more influenced by our peers and our parents. Amazing statistics about how much our behavior of our people around us affects us. You can learn optimism from people, you can pick up pessimism from people. Your entire way of looking at the world is influenced by the people around you. But of course, peer power is what happens in Tahrir Square in Egypt and in Syria right now. People organizing together, no one's the boss. No one's got a degree saying, I get to be the boss of you now. It's people coming together and working together using technology to make that easy. We've also got this debt mountain that's growing. We all have a debt mountain. I don't think people have kind of come to really how much debt we really have and how much that's going to influence the amount of credit we are not going to have. I spoke to someone about mortgages yesterday, a mortgage broker for 20 odd years, and she said, I think I should probably get out of the business, because she said, what you read in the papers isn't even true. No one is getting a mortgage at the moment. So there is a serious lack of credit, and what businesses need to grow is credit of some form. Because if you have appetite for growth and you don't have the money to put into bringing on 3 or 4 people before you can really afford to pay them, you have a real challenge if you want to grow. A real challenge. And you add to that a scarcity of time, because we're all working insane hours at the moment just to keep from going under. And the lack of intelligence that we all have, because the world is so complex, we can't ever get perfect knowledge. As an individual or a small organization or even a larger organization, you can't ever get perfect knowledge. Things are just too crazy, too fast moving, too complex. So if you want to find out about an industry, it's a lot easier to work with someone else who really knows it than to start trying to do it all yourself. And even the largest companies in the world are now getting that. And Roland will share with you, I'm sure, later, some of the work he's doing with helping large companies work with entrepreneurs, innovators, and other companies to pull together their expertise to make new products and services happen quicker. Because basically, one person, one enterprise, one state cannot achieve their aims anymore. The US is no longer able to do what it needs to do on its own, as I think you can see in Afghanistan and Iraq. Just brute force and a lot of money does not create the change you want to see anymore. You have to work with people. You have to work with them in a sense of partnership and a sense of collaboration, and what that means is a sense of equality. There's no point walking in the room and saying, well, I'm the big guy from the other ministry, or I'm the big guy from the diplomatic corps, this is what we're going to do. Because people don't respond anymore. They know they have the power. They know there is people power, and it's not going anywhere. Or African proverb, which I love, which is really important for entrepreneurs, like myself, to remember this. If you want to go fast, do it alone. But if you want to go far, go with a group. And that's something I have to remember still, because obviously at some times for an entrepreneur, doing things in collaboration is not the right thing to do. And take up a lot of time and energy that actually isn't right for that particular need. But if you want to create something of longevity with a legacy, then you're going to have to work with other people. So to sum it up, if you have ambition, you need to collaborate. Or to go the other way, if you don't think you need to collaborate, then you don't have a big enough ambition. That's what the ultimate truth is. So we're interested in this kind of age of co-creation. I use the word co-creation rather than collaboration, because it brings for me towards something towards moving forward, creating rather than necessarily just collaborating. The age of co-creation. And within evolutionary theory, there's a very important law that I bring up a lot called the law of requisite variety. And what this basically means is an organism a cell, mollusk, whatever, has to have a level of complexity, a level of patterning which matches its environment. If the world gets more complex, the organism has to get more complex to survive. So you basically got decisions about: you fit the context or you fail. You either get networked in your thinking, not necessarily in your broadband, but that's really helpful as well. If you get networked in your thinking, then you will fit the realities of the age. If you don't, then eventually you will fail, because the world cannot support you unless you work with it. A great example of this, possibly the greatest example at the moment, General Motors, who actually invented the idea of line management and KPIs. Sloan, who went off to set up the school at Harvard, business school. He invented KPIs and line management to manage people, to manage risk, to manage what he thought were stupid workers, to prevent them from making mistakes and costing his businesses money. And they went bust in the networked age. Couldn't deal with the realities of having a massive union that was adversarial, fighting them all the time. Because if you push people down, they'll push back. And that's what eventually scuppered GM. Not to mention all the other issues with products and services, not meeting customers' needs, not understanding their customers, because they didn't share how they develop businesses together. So the principles of how we do business has to change. So here's I do apologise, I hope this is not getting too far for a morning, but this slide will be up on my website for downloads if you want to peruse it at some time. So I'm going to look at those four tribal, hierarchical, market and networked economies and see what the differences are for us all. So in the tribal economy, the central idea is strength to solidarity. The top point of a tribe is that you have strength against other tribes, against natural disasters, through being together, so solidarity. And the motives of doing that is loyalty and kin. You know them, they're part of your family, they're part of your people. The way you create value in a tribe is some collective effort. Let's work together. It's a wonderful example of the Amish when they want to do barn raising. You know that barn raising? Without any money, they raise a barn. A massive barn. Everyone coming together, putting resources, doing it together in a collective effort. That's a wonderful example of a tribal value creation. And the type of leader that works really well in tribes is a hero. I'm going to go and often do this and make it happen. And everyone goes, yay. So that really works very powerfully. In the hierarchy, the central really idea of hierarchies, unfortunately, is power through fear. Some form of fear. And the motives of a hierarchy is fear. The small people are motivated by fear, and the big people are motivated by some form of vested interest. If you're an aristocrat and you keep hold of your huge swathe of land, you've got to keep the people down. The way to create value is to conquer other nations, conquer other markets. So for the good almost 200 years, the way Britain grew was to conquer countries and make them buy our stuff and take their stuff at a very, very cheap rate. And the type of leader that works really well is an autocrat. And we're actually still developing autocrats very well in some of our schools and universities. In a market, the central idea of a market is you have reward through competition. We all compete and we all get rewarded for our efforts. And the motives are self-interest, supposedly, although I actually disagree with why most entrepreneurs are in business. I don't think it's out of self-interest. I've actually never worked with an entrepreneur in my entire life who's actually there to make money. Every entrepreneur I've ever worked with is there to do something amazing, to create something fabulous, to whatever it is. And the money is something that's important, but it's not the single driving force. Unfortunately, most economists still don't really believe that. Way to create value is to create economies of scale. The bigger the better, the more widgets we can pump out at the lowest cost, the more money we make. And if we can make sure that we have proprietary IP on it, then we're really in a business. And the type of leader that works is either an entrepreneur or a technocrat. You either do it yourself, or you manage a technical team that does it in a big company. And then we come to the networked economy. What's happening here? Well, the central idea, the way I describe it, is it's some form of flourishing through co-creation. We work together to create stuff that helps us all flourish. And for me, flourishing is not just happiness. It's happiness through and because of challenges. We take challenges on, and we grow through the challenges, and we flourish. And we have more challenges and more shocks to the system, and we just use them to grow, to find new capacities, to create more together. What's the motives for a networked economy? We have to have some kind of common purpose. One of the great forming obstacles of great collaboration is that we don't have a common purpose enough. And often we get so excited about rushing into a collaboration that we don't spend enough time talking about what our real intent is and making sure it's mutual. And so everyone gets rushes in, you go, yeah, we're going to do this collaboration, and then 6 to 9, 12 months later, the problems start beginning, and you realise it's because you weren't really sure of the other person's actual intent. Often because we're not even sure of our intent ourselves until we've got asked and we're to think about it. What are we doing this for? Why are we in this business? Good questions to ask before we start rushing into collaboration. How do you create value in a network? Well, you enable ecosystems rather than verticals. You create ecosystems. And a great example is Arm, the chip maker, and their war with Intel. And Arm sell their chips for pennies. They don't make them. They enable an ecosystem of manufacturers to build chips, to license chips on their own machines. They have very little money on them. Not really. The proprietary technology is a very small chunk, but they sell a lot of them. And most of our mobile phones are now focused on ARM chips. Whereas Intel is the old way, which is we spend lots of money on R&D, and then we will charge you $100 to put a chip in your machine. Really interesting, different way of doing business. And the type of leader that obviously works as a collaborative leader. And so I did a lot of work in helping people who have been trained and schooled on hierarchical leadership principles, command and control, etc., to shift towards a more collaborative style. It's a very interesting shift to make. It's actually quite a foundational shift in how we structure our self-concept and who we think we are. And hopefully it has benefits for people in their family and friends as well. So nets work. They really do work. They're very powerful things. I'm not going to go into details. I wanted to give you just a broad brush of what's going on in there. Networks help you reduce the cost of transactions, the cost of sharing information, giving people stuff, taking stuff from them. As you know now, you can Skype someone rather than go meet them. That's an example of a massively reduced opportunity cost. So you could have 20 new business calls in a day rather than have to get on in your car and go driving around. Skype's a pretty good simulation of a person-to-person meeting. Networks help you increase the flow of ideas and intentionality. So you can put out a call for an intention on the internet, a manifesto, a one-page website in 5 minutes using WordPress saying, we want to do this, come and find us. And you'd be amazed, people start emailing you going, oh yeah, that sounds really cool, kind of interested in that. And they're all over the world. I've had conversations with a client in Singapore, and for a year I only met him recently. Works for the Singapore government, and we've been working together doing stuff, never met him. Just been meeting through blogs and Facebook and friends and whatever. And what it does is it forces us to do the one most important thing we can do, the sort of lesson I've learned, is you have to open up. We have to learn how to open up to other resources, other sources of value outside our organisation. But we also have to open up our minds, open up our capacity to take on other people's views who may not have the same view as us. And in fact, enjoy that process of working out what your common intent is. Because beneath every intent or purpose is actually a load of assumptions about business, about the way the market works, about customers. So by collaborating, you actually get to share and reveal your own understanding of yourself and what you're doing, which helps you grow and create better businesses that do more good, etc. So it's a really important thing, this idea of opening up our minds to new thoughts and new ideas. So, sort of come towards a conclusion. The thing that people don't often tell you, and this is why this Partner to Succeed program has been so amazing and sort of blown me away actually, how little of this has been done out there, is that collaboration takes quite a lot of energy and investment to get it right. It's not just we're going to collaborate, great, everything's just brilliant. You're working with other people and their needs and their problems and their issues, their timelines, their business situations. And it takes quite a lot of time to get it right. And what Partners to Succeed does is give people a safe space to do that work by funding a bit of time, funding the connections, to really make sure that if you're going to collaborate, you get it right. Because I've been involved in probably 5 failed collaborations, and they've almost taken my business down. Because the thing about collaborations is not a supplier-vendor relationship. And if you can do the work without them, it's not really a collaboration. And if they go, because they decide they're going to retire, you never knew that.